This is a production of Cornell University.
The structure is that it alternates each year, whether it's a graduate student, graduate or professional student, or a undergraduate student who is elected. But whichever one it is, the entire student body votes. So in the election coming up, for the graduate professional undergraduates will vote as well. Our goal is to really enhance diversity of the student community that's not represented, I'll get to that in a second, but that serves on the board. So looking for potential candidates from across the graduate and professional student community, including students who might be at Geneva or Cornell Tech in New York. They are eligible to run. Our goal is to look at candidates who are engaged in the community across activities, not just in student government, in governance, but also who may be active in other kinds of campus community. So we're trying to build information and go like the next slide. Maybe it's safe now. So let me say a little bit about the trustee role, and then maybe we'll have a couple questions then. So when you're elected to the board, you are a full member of the Board of Trustees, which is the governing board for the entire university, including the medical school, Cornell Tech, and everything. And as a fully elected member, your responsibility is to the university. You actually have a legal fiduciary responsibility. You do not represent the community, the constituency that elects, there are also alumni that are trustees, some trustees appointed by the governor, things like that. We have a very large board. Nonetheless, the particular importance of the student elected trustees is that Manish can say more about this, but you bring the student voice, which is really important. For the student elected trustees, it's a 2-year term. So one of the things is you have to expect to still be here for 2 years if you're going to run. But beyond that, so let Nisha say a little bit more about the role.
Yeah. So like Bruce said, you serve as a full voting member of the board. Something to remember is that, like Bruce said, the board is pretty large. There are 64 voting members of the board, and most of them aren't at Cornell anymore. Most of them are alumni, they work in other places. And so one of the important roles of the constituent elected trustees, including the student elected trustees, is that we're part of a small group of members of the board who can really speak to how the community is feeling right now and how the certain health of the community is. So that's a really important responsibility. In addition to that, as a student elected trustee, you have a couple of additional responsibilities. One of them is that you are expected to write a trustee viewpoint for the Cornell Daily Fund. So usually about once a month, you have to write a piece for that. You are also expected to present at the student and campus like committee meeting of the board of trustees. So twice a year, you'll be allowed to present to them. And so that's your opportunity to bring forth any student issue that you think is relevant to the board that they may not have heard about recently.
Say which ones you've talked
about. So I have some things that I've been talked about by myself or Justin, who's the previous undergrad trustee. We've been talked about graduate students as alumni, potential donors. We talked about students with disability. We talked about the IEP program. We've talked about, first-generation low-income students. We talked about that as well. So that's student campus life. And then we also get to plan a dessert reception, which is a much more intimate conversation between the executive committee of the board and certain groups of students. And so we've done gender non-conforming and trans students. We've done student stigma with absence, things like that. So you are responsible for sort of highlighting different student communities that the board may not have heard of before. Outside of that, so the board meets formally 4 times a year, so you are required to be in Ithaca and you are required to attend those 4 board meetings. That's sort of one of the key responsibilities of being on the board. In addition to that, you may also be asked to sit on certain university committees. So you may be asked to sit on search committees. I sat on a search committee. Sometimes other committees, like I sit on the Mental Health Coalition, et cetera. So there are university committees you may be asked to sit on. But your biggest responsibility is obviously the board coordinating. I think that's it. Do you want, am I forgetting any students?
No.
Yeah. Are there any, I guess I can take questions now if there are any questions on the role, things I do, et cetera.
What's the time commitment?
So I would actually say that so during the board meeting, it's a huge time commitment. That is about 4 days when you're expected to be there full time. So the weeks of the board meetings, I get nothing done, and that is, it starts at like 7:30, you're going till 9:30, 10 each day for about 4 or 5 days in a row. So that's the hardest part is, but you are excused from all of your classes if you're worried about that. So you're like advisor or professor can like penalize you for that. But you are totally booked up during those weeks. Outside of that, I'd say really only a couple hours a week. You go to certain events to talk to different people, but in terms of like formal commitment that I do physically, I'm required to be at that space, I'd say like a couple hours a week, but I go to other committee like community events that happen throughout the semester to talk to people and stuff. That's on my own. But I'm not like required.
I'd say one other thing, there does tend to be a fair amount of reading.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That especially in the run-up to, usually about a week or so before a board meeting, you get a link to more PDFs than I usually download.
Yeah. Not even like a week before. So like the board meeting starts Wednesday evening, but probably like Sunday evening, Monday morning, you'll get all the board reading. And so you'll spend most of Monday and Tuesday reading those, taking notes. And then the board meeting starts. So it's really like a whole week. But that only happens 4 times a year.
Are there any limitations to international
students applying
for
positions?
To what?
To international students. Yep. J1 is an international student. Yep.
Do you talk about that now or later? Let's hold that question for just a minute so I explain the problem.
So we talk about the
answer. Yeah.
Any other questions about the actual like, role of what I do?
What do you occupy
Yeah, so I have a fairly close working relationship with the executive committee. I also used to be on the executive committee before I was in this role, but I talk to Andy, Alexa, Victoria fairly frequently and say, if I hear anything, and I can say, hey, can you comment on this? Or sometimes they'll send me certain things where they're like, hey, just wanted to let you know that this is happening. Do you have any idea of administrators and things? But I would say that I am not a member of the assembly formally. Obviously, I am like, I think I'm an ex officio member, but I don't really get to say what you guys do because I'm at the board level now. So I feel like we're fairly keyed into, like, I'm aware of the resolutions that come out of the assembly, different actions that are being taken in certain committees, but my job is not to, like, intervene and get involved. That's really, I think it's a little bit appropriate.
That does speak to one other issue, which is that as a board member, there's a variety of things that happen at the board level that are confidential. So there's not as much reporting back as students would want, as my faculty colleagues would want me to be reporting back, that you do have to, so there is a balancing there of lots of listening, not necessarily in this community or the campus community speaking back. I'm talking about general issues, but probably not specific issues that are coming up.
Yeah, so like for instance, you have to sign a non-disclosure agreement, so you can't comment on any of the conversations that happen in the boardroom space, which is sometimes really frustrating because you would love to be able to talk about that. But the biggest thing you do is you're actually building a network of people you can talk to. That's really what I spent the 2 years and part of my time on the board doing is having those people where when certain things happen, I can say, hey, I heard something happening in your department. What's going on?
Could you go into a little more detail about the legal fiduciary responsibility? Like, for instance, if you were to suggest something that could possibly harm you down, would you be censored for that?
No, you wouldn't be censored, but ultimately your vote on the board your vote would have to be your judgment about what is in the best interest of the university from a legal and from a fiduciary, from a financial point of view. If you believe that a particular action is not in the best interest of the long-term finances of the university, it would be appropriate to vote that way, as you have expressed why you think that. I'm pretending that I don't know what this issue is. and one of the reasons it said a full member of the board, the other members of the board, the alumni, the trustee appointed members, are extremely receptive to hearing from the student elected trustees, faculty, the employee elected trustees. And it is possible to make your arguments there. And they will be listened to with respect and sometimes persuasively.
I would not expect that you would be censored in any way. But I will say that, and Jay, when I think we get comment on this, they take what we say very seriously. There's 54 people you can't speak all the time, but when we do choose to speak, they listen very carefully to what we have to say. And a lot of our conversations actually don't happen in the actual meeting, but in our committee meetings, in between sessions. And I don't know if you had, if I've had trustees come and ask you, be like, hey, I've seen this thing in the Daily Sun, what's going on? Why do you feel this way? Can you explain to me why you feel this way or why you want to vote this way? They really do want to talk to you. So you do have the opportunity to like plead your case and explain why you feel strongly one way or one way another way. But that doesn't assure you they'll vote with you or feel the same way as you. That's how any sort of large voting body works.
Yeah.
But you will have the opportunity to explain why you feel that.
Can I have a question from Mary Borges? She wants to know if you can elaborate on the
So I'll get to that. Yeah, why don't I?
Yeah, why don't you?
If there's no other specific questions about the role. We can come back to that. Let me go on.
I have a quick question.
Yep.
Is the NDA given to the student trustees identical to that given to the other trustee, the appointed trustee?
As far as I know, it is.
Yes, all right, cool. Yeah. And also, I think the assembly president also gets invited to certain sessions, not all of the sessions, but just to everybody, but they also have to sign an NDA. So anybody who sits
So the process, the committee, so the trustee nominee committee doesn't exist. Gone. So we have this new committee for campus constituency elected trustees. The point is that the previous name was not really what we did. We didn't nominate. We managed the election, and that's really sort of what our goal is to do that. So our goal is to inform the community about the role. The committee was just established at the board meeting at the end of October, so we're just sort of getting rolling. In future years, our hope is that this kind of presentation will actually happen earlier in the fall semester so that we can begin building interest in the elections throughout the year and getting plenty of time for questions and such. Answering questions. We then manage the election process in the sense of being an oversight. The day-to-day operation is through the Office of the Assembly, and so Gina and her staff run the day-to-day setting up the website, handling the election process. But we, as a committee, establish the schedule for what's going to happen. Show a little bit of the next slide, any issues that come up during the election process, and we handle any challenges that happen to in a through the election. So what is the process? So the first process is we set up a calendar, and I actually don't have the date in my head, and I forgot to bring out this paper. You have it in your head. Dean doesn't have it in his head either. Anyway, and then in the fall semester, they say time to do information sessions. And then in the spring, we'll again have some sort of open public information sessions about the process where people from various groups can be there. People who decide that they want to run, and it still is a process of having to get signatures on petitions. People who want to be candidates and want to have some really detailed information will come to those meetings. The election itself will happen, I believe, just before spring break this year. And to say if there are any challenges, we try to prepare those as expeditiously as we can. So there's a question about the process. Does that answer the questions about the?
Yes.
I should have said who else. Yes. So the committee consists of the current constituency elected trustees. So that's the two faculty elected trustees, the two student elected trustees, and the employee elected trustee. And then the employee assembly, the student assembly, and GPSA each appoint a member. There's a crucial issue here, which is that if you think that you might be running or endorsing a candidate, you can't be on this committee. And so GPSA is still in the process of identifying someone who will be the representative on the committee. And this is actually a really critical issue, actually led to problems in the past, because if somebody goes on a committee and then decides either to run or to endorse, they have to step off the committee, and the board has explicitly stated in the rules, there's not going to be a new person appointed to fill the term. It's there. So it's really critical to have someone who cares, but who is willing to step out of endorsing someone. And we see that actually in current employees. So Jeremy Cruiser, who's a member of the CIT staff, he's the current employee elected trustee. He was appointed trustee to fill a term that somebody left early. And so he's actually planning on considering running in the employee election, which will also happen in the spring. And he has therefore chosen not to be on the CCCP committee, and instead a former employee elected trustee is serving in that role.
Would that be appropriate to talk a little bit more about campaigning?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to add some clarity to what that campaign process looks like. So opening in January, I think the first week of spring semester, petitions will become available. The first step in essentially becoming a candidate is you need to obtain a petition of 500, I think is the number, is it 500, Tina? 300 student signatures. So we have about a month to collect those signatures, I think is our timeline. You can just go to the Big Red Barn and Student Cafe. That's literally what I did because I walked around it. Make sure it's just letting you get on the ballot, like an endorsement of you or anything. You then have to submit that along with a statement of your candidacy, who you are, what your platform is, etc. And then once that's approved, the campaign will actually go live. And there are a set of rules for campaigning. If you're really interested in that, we can talk about that, but that's probably more appropriate for the detailed info sessions for candidates. Campaigning lasts about 3 weeks. I will say from my experience, I think J1 will agree, it's a pretty rigorous process. So be prepared for that if you're interested in running. That comes on before, so you know that it's a pretty rigorous process. Yeah, it's a tough process. I will say it's a big commitment to campaigning. Something else you should be aware of is that you are also expected to participate in a debate of all the candidates. That's usually hosted by the Cornell Daily Sun. And then that's the only debate that happens is with the Cornell Daily Sun, and then elections happen. If you have specific questions about what campaigning is like, I would be happy to talk about that with you offline, but I will say it's a pretty big commitment. Probably the biggest commitment of my entire tenure as trustee.
Is that it? Yep. Well, other questions?
Is a portion of the board elected by any position?
I think the largest single group is the alumni, where 8 out of the 64 are elected by the alumni. Mm-hmm. There's the 5 campus constituency. There's the governor, the head of the state assembly, the head of the state senate, the commissioner of agriculture, I think, appoint somebody. the biggest bulk is the board itself. There's a committee on board governance and composition which nominates people. So that board decision that was made a long time ago, a 1-year term is insufficient to get to know the process. It would be most exhaustive. It takes the first couple of meetings to figure out what's going on and to build relationships, and that would then be really very short time to be able to
accept that. So the idea is that all these staggered terms for undergrad and grad and professional assistancy. So the first year is sort of like a learning year, so I'm a minor senior. Now she's the senior trustee. And then so the next year that'll flip. So like every year you have at least one trustee who so all know what's going on before the seat. All of course orient the incident member on the example. So that's sort of like the information behind it, but that's
important. Yeah, I will say it would be really difficult to do this just in 1 year. Because like you really do spend the first 2 meetings, like onboarding or whatever you do, going to all the committees, learning how, but like the responsibilities of each committee are that you're more and which different trustees care about what, and do you want to go, do you have specific problems you want to talk to, which trustees are your allies, et cetera. So like you really wouldn't be able to accomplish as much as you might hope in a year. We'd love to be able to do that. There are different programs that it doesn't work out for. I think another thing is the staggering does mean certain people aren't always able to run for it. But I don't think it would really be as effective, unfortunately. A 1-year term. But I agree. We are aware of that.
Is there any phase of growth students that were undergrads from voting for grad?
No, and in fact, that was actually a very deliberate decision to allow that. It used to be, actually, that I forget the exact mechanism, but essentially it became almost impossible for undergraduates to be elected.
Technically, it's a weird reverse. Yeah.
And so it used to be that sort of each one could run and they couldn't cross vote, and what ended up happening was the graduate students never got elected. The undergraduate, because the nature of the undergraduate student body is easier to campaign to them. And so there was a very deliberate decision to do this business of if the entire student body would vote, but it's only a specific set who can run in the way of the election. The graduate professional students, this year, there will be no undergraduate election in this year, undergraduate student.
So, yeah. So I think Alex's question is specifically to having still a graduate professional student because he's the only elected by graduate professional students.
I guess I understood that was your question. I'm not saying, the board explicitly decided, no, this is that part of the goal is to have both graduate and professional student trustees and undergraduate student trustees who pay attention to the entire student.
I was a graduate professional student this year in this role. I would really, really encourage you guys to get engaged in this process. The reality is that undergrads do outnumber us, and so they can play a really influential role in deciding who this position is. And I think it's really important that we get engaged and that we make sure that whoever is sitting in this position is able to speak to our concerns. Because I do get asked mostly about graduate professional student stuff. Sometimes I get asked about undergrad things, but more often than not, I'm asked about graduate professional student issues.
So if any of us are glad to answer other questions afterwards, feel free to reach out to any of us. And as I said, our real goal here is to start spreading information. So if you go back to your communities and let them know that this is coming up in the spring and if anybody's interested in running, they should look into it more. There is information on the Assembly's website about the event.
Or even if you're not interested in running, if you know of a person that you think would be really up to work for this role, please encourage them to run. Please let them know about it. We're really, really hoping to have a competitive pool of students.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
stick around during your division breakout if anyone wants to ask me any questions afterwards. Oh, we're not having a division breakout?
Yeah, it's like a 5 minute.
Oh. We'll hang up 5 minutes.
Thank you very much. So now we'll move on to division breakout. So as we mentioned, so Manisha is on her way out, so if you want to get one last word, you can speak with her. But for this, we're not dividing. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So these are the links. It's the same link, this is the shortening link. And that's how you would sign in. So we'll take a couple of minutes to do that, and then continue on to our meeting. So right now we are signing in into you don't need to separate it for our resume the meeting. Did everyone get this in the time? It's not hard to attach to the meeting. So next on the agenda is we have elections, and today we will be voting for a finance commission chair. Esther, would you like to talk a little bit about what that means? Esther is our current finance commission chair. Okay, so now I'd like to take nominations for Finance Commission Chair. You can nominate yourself or someone else. Yes, that's it. Okay, Ariel, do you accept the nomination?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. Okay, great. Are there any other nominations for Finance Commission Chair? Seeing once, seeing twice. Huh? Okay, I will close nomination, and we are going to do a ballot. And so we're going to do a ballot. So Ariel, if you would like to come and talk a little bit about yourself and commence por
favor. Thank you. Thank you, so I'm currently the vice president or vice chair of the Finance Commission. And one thing that I noticed is that not many people on campus like really understand why we do this. And they're just like, give me my money for my student organization. But what's really crucial is that like having this committee exist allows graduate students to like have input as to how the student activity is actually spent to make sure that it's done in what is more or less a fair and equitable manner. And so that's super important. So one of my main goals as president of this would be to sort of try and improve awareness around campus of why we exist and try and get sort of buy-in from people as to, you know, what our purpose is. And another thing that's happening is that a student organization benefits office, or SOBO, just opened in Wheeler Street Hall. So that is going to be a really great place to go to get help with like the budgeting and reimbursement systems and just with how student organizations work on campus in general. So one of my goals will be to try to integrate like our goals with the benefit office to make sure that students can go and get like really good help there. Let's see. And yeah, my third idea on the committee will be to basically make sure that we have, so Esther's done a really amazing job heading the transition to campus groups. And I want to make sure that we really like institutionalize that knowledge. So maybe documents for people internally on the committee and externally, stuff that we can distribute to the SOBO. To make sure that everybody is on board and that we can sort of continue to run in a smooth way in the future with this new system. So does anybody have any questions? Yeah.
Do you know who you wanted to vice chair?
I would love for people to volunteer to be a vice chair. So if you know that you would like to be a vice chair, then please let me know. Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, so if you haven't already filled out your ballot, you can write Ariel's name, it's right up here, or you can also do no confidence. Or abstaining. Those are your options. Alexa will collect the ballot.
Thank you.
So next we would like to move on to old business. And this is where we discuss resolutions. Is there a motion to continue on? No, there's not a motion. So we'll go ahead and do discussion of resolution 3, which is demanding a mandatory arbitration. The class action ban be removed from CashNet and other community agreements, and I will ask Jaren to come down. And during this part of the meeting, remember that we discuss the language in the resolution itself. So Alex, can you collect the ballots? That way Alexa can help me with the... Oh. Okay. Yeah, can you do that? So we will go ahead and get the discussion. So we'll open it up to formal discussion, and this is where we make changes or modifications to the actual resolution. Does anyone have any questions, modifications that they would like to make to the resolution as it stands?
Floor is open. Anyone?
I'll start to speak at this.
Does anyone want a motion? Oh.
Oh, in alternatives to cash that you're asking?
Yes.
I haven't, but I imagine it's probably roughly a coin toss based on how these things travel. But again, I think resorting to switching services is completely unnecessary. I think Cornell has more than enough clout with its service providers to get this done basically just with email. I remember for a while I was helping with a course where we were in contact with developers of like a Canvas style service that we were using for the course that Cornell had licensed. We would ask them for it would be really nice like if this major change was done. Thinking that was way down the line when I do it. Then next week they come back and like, oh my gosh, you like it? We've implemented the thing you want. These companies that depend on these large institutions tend to be incredibly responsive to their feedback. I don't think it will be much of an issue.
Any other questions or modifications to the whole resolution as a whole? Seeing none.
I mean, does anyone want to make a motion on the resolution?
This is where we decide to vote.
Or call.
If there's been a motion to call the question to vote on the resolution as it is without any modification, there's a second. There's a second. There's a second. Seeing none. Okay, so if the voting members can either raise their placard or their hands. All in favor of passing this resolution as it is, please hand your placard, please. So I have 13. Any dissent? Okay. Any abstentions? 13 to 11. 13. So officially, we have the resolution 13 in favor to 0 to 11. The resolution passes. Congratulations. Oh, and we would like to congratulate Ariel for winning the Finance Commission Chair. Okay. Next, we have to introduce new business, and also we'll introduce new business. So this is Resolution 4, recommendation for the graduate and professional student activity fee for 2020-2022, and this is the reason why we rescheduled the meeting for today instead of just canceling it, because the deadline to submit this to the president, that being Martha Pollack, is tomorrow. So we have to pass this tomorrow as well. For now, we will just introduce it, and that will be James.
Yeah, if this doesn't pass, then the old fee stays, and that will be a waste.
Okay.
Just have it allocated. So, yes,
sir. Can I do
no problem.
Oh, you did. Yeah. I was going to put that up anyway.
Okay.
All right, hi guys. Chair of the Appropriations Committee. I've been up here a few times. But besides just signing your reimbursement sheets, what actually my main, most of my headaches come from is this. So if you're unaware or not too educated, the student activity fee is a small part of your tuition bill, and it funds large organizations across campus, such as the such as in the resolution, if you have a copy, the nine or so there. So we had some last minute hiccups regarding Cornell Tech. Brief history, we've been trying to get Cornell Tech on the byline for a few years, the last couple of cycles. They always ghost us, apparently, as so they always end up not getting on and trying to get on the last second. And in the last week or so, with Andy's help and the Office of Assemblies, we've hopefully came up with an equitable solution where they are going to get some funding out of the DPSASC for this cycle, and with hopes and some pressure from us that they will be on time in the next cycle. So then you'll see their Cornell Tech among these fine organizations here. Anyway, what I want to show you is, if you get, first of all, if anyone wants to email this report, it's our outline of our, I don't want to say findings, but our decisions. But the most important page is the last one. And this shows a comparison between the last cycle, which is what we paid, and this upcoming cycle. So going into this, one of my personal objectives was to keep the activity fee somewhat the same and potentially decrease it. That proved a little more difficult. But so here are the allocations. On the left, you see the funding currently, which is what we paid this semester. The middle column is their requests, and the third column is our recommendation. Compare, I don't know if you're not familiar, didn't read about the student assembly, our job is a little more easy. We don't have too much contention or issues with the organizations. They're pretty straightforward. They provide adequate financial budgets to us. So it's not too hard to determine. This, along with statistically, over the last few years, graduate professional students have been increasing in population significantly. This provides us with sort of an ease that, you know, at least with some of these organizations who are worried that they're not going to get too much adequate funding, that they're going to be fine. Some of the organizations have shown that they've saved rollover funds. Specifically the programming board, undergraduate programming board, excuse me. Always seems to have a really nice rollover fund. So they, then along with ISU, you know, asked for somewhat of a large increase, both since the last few cycles, like from what I've seen, as it was here, there's sort of been a strive to get more graduate professional participation in these organizations. Both have been, for the most part, geared towards undergraduate students. And, you know, there's obviously, you know, some an issue, like, you know, we don't want to just be funding undergraduate activity. But since the last cycle, both have shown an increase in participation. ISU now has, I think last cycle they had one graduate student in their organization, and now they have about 11. Which I mean, in an organization with like, they have like 50 official members, is a step in the right direction. Last cycle, and the Appropriations Committee, you know, asked that they make strides towards getting more involved and maybe to the point of 50-50 participation. So we, you know, it was comfortable raising them to 162, which was actually their funding allocation prior to 2018. 2018 allocation was 162. And our recommendation to the next committee would be to just monitor that, which if you're curious, I could send you this full outline, which says, you know, the next committee should make sure that these attempts have been continued. Anyway, if you see on the bottom, second bottom, the final funding total is the total amount for all these organizations. The quick mention, the orientation for graduate student program is no longer receiving funding. They didn't want it. Also, Cornell Cinema, I should mention, there's last year there's an agreement between us where they're trying to get off the byline. So every cycle they'll be decreasing by $2, and that has been already agreed upon. So next cycle, if you're here, you'll see that they'll go down to $7 as they try to become sustainable on their own. So after doing all this, there's a marginal increase of 2.8% of funding those organizations. The GPSASD has a slight 1.6% increase, but this is obviously a large number because they get over 35% of what the fee would be. As I mentioned earlier, Cornell Tech, we've stuck them under here to sort of find somewhat of a solution to provide that funding for their PhD students as they look to get on the byline next cycle. So, I've been talking a lot, and I'm sure, I don't know.
So now that Rebecca kills,
but if anyone has a specific question,
I'm going to make a
So this, if I could go up on this presentation, athletics, and you know what, you might not be aware of it. They reserve a specific amount of hockey tickets for graduate students only. You can get the Big Red Sports Pass for free, and this is what that money goes towards. They request any increase in funding for a student. They were comfortable with the same. I should also note, though, you know, student population increases every year, so you know they are still getting some more money, which would help them continue these services. And obviously, our recommendation, you know, to any of these organizations is to, you know, always try to increase participation. And in the future, if, you know, they do want more money, that's the easiest way to justify it. You know, if there's increased graduate participation in any one of these organizations, then it's a lot easier to come here and say, hey, like, you know, how about like, try to get like a dollar more by the student or something. And if they show that through their budgetary needs, then we can do that. So that's kind of the weighing of interest here. But if you have not signed up for the Big Red Sports Pass, you should look at it. I'll go back to the summary.
Any other questions?
Yeah. I have two just like, I don't know what the thing is for questions. What is club insurance?
Yeah, so every club on the university has insurance, kind of like for accidents, I could really show you.
Like homeowner insurance?
Here you go.
Someone to walk outside your club?
This provides a little summary of the. So yeah, if you're in charge of a club, you have insurance. And it's always been like that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I figured I'd get a question. Yes. Last cycle they had one. I should mention that these are officially listed members and not those who participate in events.
Okay, that sounds very.
We're aware that this is one of the more contentious organizations that we're providing money for, and that's again been brought up. Last cycle, we still provide them money, and we ask that they first finger check the graduate student form. Within 2 years, again, they increased the, I mean, on their official membership, it's now 11 out of like 47 or something. Obviously, all their events are still open to both undergrad and graduate students as required.
Did you have something that
is
you?
Well, so this is related to ISU, so them only having 50 members sounds like not much, but they're actually a programming board that distributes funding to other organizations. So any org can go to ISU and say, we are holding this event that fits in your, like, wheelhouse, so to speak, and get funding from them for other events. So it's sort of like how, like, the Finance Commission itself distributes funding on the grid. So this just indicates that there are now like maybe like a quarter of their members are graduate students and stuff. They are being more of a graduate student voice and how all that money is.
So that's very helpful. Why is that money going to
Yeah, so I mean it's a specific targeted population that they're supporting. So events that are so that would be like there's a lot of different organizations like the union and things like that that get a lot of funding directly. But I mean, things like the spring recognition that you said that it's special for the whole state football, which is from my idea. And that's a event that all regular special students are always welcome to. They fund for our idea.
I should briefly mention, off the top of my head, I think undergraduate population, there's about 10 to 15% international students. Graduate school, it's like almost 40%. It's in the 30s. I believe I read that recently. So there is justification to support this organization. It's just a matter of getting more graduate and professional participation. Obviously, that goes both ways. You know, just our tendency, you know, kind of more on our own, so you know it's a give and take. But you know what we really want these organizations to do is just provide a better platform for more students to get involved when their people are paying money to it already. Is that good?
I had Dawn next.
How many students are paying this year? The $86. Our current enrollment entering this semester is 8,900 students.
Hi, Ariel.
Yeah, I think this is so the grad orientation is not asking for money anymore. Is the grad orientation itself changing or higher than not?
They're so no, they we're not saying.
I think from the last finance cycle, we decided to take it off because compared to our peer institutions, none of the other our counterparts were funding the graduate organization. So I think we decided to do it.
Yeah. So like specific.
Yeah.
Some of the other schools, you're the only school, as far as I know, that controls the student.
of the other schools, the student activity fee comes from the graduate school, the graduate school decides how much money to give the GPSA, which then would make sense for them to give back, which is the opposite. Do you agree with
me? Also, I know, like, so many specific programs have their own orientation, and that's also really what most students go to anyway. So that was something else involved in that conversation. But yeah, it was both sides of the group didn't take it offline.
Any other questions for him? Seeing none, let's go back to the resolution to make sure that everything is crystal clear before we move on. Any questions about the resolution as it stands or any of the background information that gets presented on? Okay, seeing none. So traditionally we introduce a resolution and you vote on it at the next meeting. However, since we have a deadline tomorrow, we will have to vote on this today. So given that process, Alexa. Okay, so there's been a motion to suspend the article on the bylaw to state that we have to wait a whole meeting to vote on a resolution. So that is a motion on the floor. There's been a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing none? Okay. Yes,
we do.
Well,
it's not necessarily a dissent, but I just want to voice the concern that this is one of the larger responsibilities we have, and waiting a meeting like rule is put into place so that people are made aware of things like how much they're going to be charged for student activity for the next 2 years ahead of time, so that when we vote on it, they can come and speak if they feel like it. So while I'm not necessarily defending this, I just want to make it known that it's not ideal in any meeting.
I would like to say I also agree with that, and especially with potentially in the next cycle new organizations coming off the byline, which they get vetted more than ones that are simply returning. This cycle there's no new byline organizations. Just so you guys know.
So just to be clear, Eugene, that was not a dissent, so there's not a dissent.
It's just something for voting members, like I can't vote, to take into account when they're voting on whether they feel like this is an appropriate thing to set about why we have that bylaw in place.
Absolutely. And I think James alluded in the beginning, if we don't vote on the bylines on the byline funding by tomorrow, the previous cycle will be used for the next 2 years. So a lot of our organizations would be very unhappy. I know the deadline to submit the resolution is tomorrow, so that would require everyone to vote, to actually vote sometime before tomorrow's deadline, and I don't think that's a risk we would need.
That would be dependent on the fact that all the students right now would be able to come back to the room and vote.
Can we do that while we discuss this?
Of course.
So, So the motion was to suspend the bylaw. Nothing to do with the resolution.
Right. So, I guess to clarify, I was technically he presents a resolution and a Q&A, and then that ends. In order to continue actual motion of discussion on the resolution itself, we need to suspend the bylaws. So that is what Alexa motion. That doesn't mean we have to vote on it. That just means that we are now opening the floor to discussion if that suspension happens.
Does anyone have a question about that?
Wait,
Do all the bylaws get suspended, or just the
ones? No, just the RSA.
Suspend the article that states that motion.
All right.
Good question. So the motion is to suspend that article under bylaw that tells us that we have to wait a meeting to
continue
deliberation. Is there a dissent? Seeing none. Okay. Abstention. Okay. And so that's all in favor. So we are suspending the bylaw, and we are
now. Now we're open discussion.
Yes. Oh yes. So yeah. So the bylaws do state that we have to do 2/3 of the vote. So all in favor, please raise your hand or placard, voting number one. Okay. I have 13 in favor, 20%. 0 to 11. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. The bylaws have been suspended. And now we can open this to discussion. And you can continue to ask questions. You can continue to modify the resolution, maybe not the numbers. Yeah, not the numbers. So now we'd like to open it up to discussion, and I will be asked by the speaker. So if you have a question or a change that you would like to make the resolution as well, please raise your hand.
Yeah, I was just wondering how often Cornell grad students use the emergency medical service.
Wait, that was your
turn. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, EMS is at every large event. It's kind of hard to particularly say how often grad students themselves use. Or are you asking, like, if we use EMS more than undergrad students?
Yeah, I just think of it as, like, you know, undergrad, grad, or just every, like, EMS. And I know that they do so much more than that, but I just want to get a sense of, like, grad.
So, yeah, not just, like, responding to specific incidents, which, you know, in those cases, obviously, like, group life is largely undergrad, et cetera. But they're always present, you know, not just at sporting events, but like any event hosted, they're there, whether you, maybe if you're there, you're aware of that or not. So, yeah.
Okay.
I can't like, yeah. Plus, I mean, you know, just with trying to increase the force, and, you know, there's more students coming onto campus all the time, so, you know, that's sort of the justification there as well.
I have a question.
This was just kind of a... I understand that this is not a way to have a meeting today, but making sure that this stuff
should also mention, you know, one of the things going was also us figuring out how to come up with some sort of equitable solution for Cornell Tech. That was mainly the only setback in the last couple of weeks. Otherwise, this has been largely.
But it was a setback that took a lot. So it comes up. Yeah, thank you for that. I have Casey.
I'm in the group that is this automatic work? Can I get a copy?
Yeah, you can. Well, I can send to you or Les can send to you.
Okay. Yeah.
And also, I mean, if you want to compare it to like last cycle's copy, we have that too. And I don't know if we have this cycle before that.
Yeah, I think I have
Okay. Yeah. And we should, yeah.
And I noticed that they were asking for a certain amount. Is there a rationale?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
fine. I will go down. See if you see. So last cycle, so the prior cycle, Big Red Barn, 2016-2018, they got $10.42 up out here. They requested just a flat increase to 15 then. The prior committee finance was satisfied giving them like a 10% raise. So what the Big Red Barn has done, you know, since then and now, they've needed a larger workforce. The minimum wage is increasing, and obviously they're just hosting more graduate students. So around a 15% raise seems somewhat fair. I should mention that, you know, when they submit documents like this, they base it on a certain number of students that may or may not be accurate. So some of these organizations came with budgets assuming about like 8,000 grad students are coming in. So 8,000 grad students would be funding, you know, $15 per student. But as if you remember not earlier, I mentioned right now our enrollment is 8,900, and it's been increasing somewhat significantly after actually the last few years. $15 per student is not really needed by the Big Red Barn. And also after discussing it with them, you know, they were satisfied with something in the range of like $13. So, yeah. That's like what you see there is just the initial request that comes to us, last April. So.
I have Jeremy.
So this is kind of the spirit of, you know, we pulled money from the orientation. It was sort of embarrassing that we were being asked to fund it. Why do we fund emergency medical services? Like, we don't fund the Cornell police or like that sort of thing. Like, is there a specific reason why we are starting to contribute to this? It's just a student organization.
Yeah, I don't know exactly who funds the police, Cornell police, but they just announced it on my
mind. We can try to be funny. And they move around.
I have Dylan.
I don't, in this document I didn't provide the actual percentage, but it has increased. And, you know, along with us just agreeing to them, like staying the same, you know, our recommendations, which are kind of recommendations like the next committee, is to show that there is still an increase in participation and not necessarily a decrease. And, you know, our, not really, I guess our plea to these organizations is to, you know, focus on always increasing graduate participation. You know, as I mentioned, graduate student participation isn't always the easiest thing to get. But obviously with us putting money into it and some of us enjoying these amenities, we want to make sure that participation increases and that continues to justify what they're getting cycle to cycle. Otherwise, you know, the next cycle looks to decrease.
I'd like to remind everyone that we are still in formal discussion, which means that we can change the language. Does anyone want to make any modifications to the resolution? Or have any more questions for James regarding the process or the funds or the organization? Seeing none. So is there a motion to call to question to vote on the resolution as it stands, the activity fee being a total of $86 for the next 500 funds a year? Alexa's motioning to vote on the resolution as it is.
Is there a second? It has been a second. Is there a dissent? Seeing none? Okay. So now we are voting on the resolution. So if I could have voting members raise their hand and placard to vote on
Resolution 4.
Resolution 4.
Recommendation for graduate and professional student activity fee for 2022. Sorry.
So if I could have voting members, raise their hand or placard. Those of you in favor of this resolution. Any dissent?
So we have 12 yes, 12 abstentions based on who is absent over.
So as a chair, I abstain from voting. I did not vote. So I am formally announcing that I am voting in favor of the resolution, which changes the vote to 13-0-11, and the resolution passes. So usually in resolutions I don't vote, I assume, but So we have 13-0-11.
Did you have abstentions? If you had more abstentions than yes votes, then you did not pass.
But just to be honest,
I was just curious.
Just to be on the safe route.
Cool. Yeah.
Any questions?
Thank you,
so resolution.
I'm sorry.
4 recommendation for the graduate and professional student activity for 2022 cycle. Thank you very much. thank you, James, for your vote. Now I'd like to move on to open forum. Yes, Alexa. Okay, let's move on to the last part of the meeting, and it's adjournment.
Is there any, yes.
Motion.
Is there a motion to adjourn, is there any dissent? There's no dissent, so all in favor, yes. Okay, meeting has been adjourned. Thank you for being here. Thanks for having me. Enjoy the break.
And now.